This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 28th of June, 2022. Markets sort of losing speed a little bit after that very big rally we had on Friday. If we look at the S&P 500, the first resistance area we noted yesterday, the 21-day moving average coming in as resistance, although we note that the 61.8% retracement took somewhat higher, 39.88, and just the 4,000 level sort of more psychologically is probably the key resistance here short term. A lot of talk about quarter end coming into view on Thursday. If we are seeing a repeat of that big quarter one pump we saw into quarter end there, it actually, the peak was found. I did a little poking around yesterday that we saw the peak actually 2 days before quarter end, if we're supposed to see a repeat this time. Now, I'm not predicting that. I'm just thought it was interesting that we saw a strong peak on the March 29th and then rolled over quite aggressively thereafter. Looking at the equity theme baskets, Peter, seeing a lot of different a variety of performance levels there, and both in the green and in the red here. So, what are your takeaways from yesterday's session?
Well, it was I don't know, a poor session. I mean, we had a very strong Friday, and there was not a lot of energy to push forward here on the momentum. I've sorted on slide two here our theme baskets on months to date, just to show you how much we have come around. The rebound we have seen is really, really evident across the bubble stocks, green transformation, and the next gen medicine basket. China has been strong from the get-go this month, so there's nothing new there. So it's really those other parts I just mentioned that have turned around. And in the bottom you see commodities. That's really the big change that we have seen, and all have, you know, has talked endlessly about it this month. I mean, the growth worries out of China, etc. And I know we're going to look at another interesting soft commodity, which has totally fallen out of bed. So that's sort of the mix, the picture. I think the momentum, John, is still leaning towards the upside. I think 4,000 is still in play. Obviously, the yesterday's high, as you can see on the S&P 500 futures chart here, is the natural resistance level, at least here in the short term. So, and you've put in some retracement levels here. So for other guidance you have, I think it's 3,988 as a potential level just below 4,000 that it could potentially hit.
Yeah, and then we had a big report or a notable company reporting yesterday. Pretty ugly outlook from Nike, and a lot of that linked to China.
Yeah, so the a lot of the big consumer brands here out of the US and Europe, Adidas, H&M, Inditex, Nike, what have you, have all had troubles in China. Some of it is of course is COVID related. Other parts of it is that China is really trying to muster up the national champions. So they're really encouraging Chinese consumers to favor Chinese brands. That's also what we see across electric vehicles and smartphones, etc. And so the troubles have been snowballing for Nike in that segment. And they also, of course, pressured on freight costs, general logistics costs, input costs generally from the different types of textiles and plastics they're using for their shoes, etc., and clothing. So they, as you say, they had a pretty, I would say, downbeat relative to expectations. Their revenue growth were more or less flat from a year ago, and they say that they can see a low double-digit revenue growth this fiscal year. I think it's going to be tough, maybe in price terms. So depending on how able they are to pass on the rising cost, maybe they can do it in price terms, but I think in volume terms, I don't think they can deliver let's say a 9 or 10% growth. And then the other news that came out yesterday was Robinhood was up 14%. So FTX, which is one of the biggest crypto exchanges, is really looking at Robinhood for a potential acquisition or merger, which makes sense because the majority of Robinhood's revenue and earnings are coming. Well, earnings, that's a funny thing, because they're not positive on earnings, but the revenue side, a lot of the revenues is coming from their crypto activity. So I think the match seems pretty good, and it would be a natural thing for FTX to branch out with a consumer oriented platform.
All right, now we're getting the last of these the regional Fed manufacturing activity indices, and we saw the Dallas Fed yesterday, and there's also this just general story of inventory levels being very, very high. And this whole crazy, pig through the python effect of the pandemic, where you see a crazy demand in the physical world, physical goods, and that's kind of faded. And then people overstocking on their inventories. Now we were getting signs of inventory gluts in places. That was a big thing. It hit Target, I remember. But then maybe there's the services side that's going to do okay because economic activity, or sorry, employment levels are quite good. So people are feeling somewhat confident, at least in terms of income, if not where inflation is. But you're pulling out the Dallas Fed business activity index from yesterday. And there were some interesting comments around that as well here on slide four.
Yeah, you said already a lot of it, John, but it's just look at the level. I mean, it hit minus 17.7 versus expectations of minus 6.5, which was the expectation was actually to see an improvement in June's number, in the numbers for June compared to May. But that's not what we got. And we're actually now below the levels prior to that slowdown as we headed into the pandemic, as you can see. So we're down to the lows from 2016. And then beyond that, you have to go back to the euro crisis and the great financial crisis of 08. So I think it's looking very dire. It's part of that picture of why potentially the equity market could, in the short term, actually be in a positive mood if this print, so you know, is going to be the bottom, at least in the short term. Or you can phrase it in another way. Sentiment is so bad out there that maybe only numbers can surprise from here. That's a big question. But, you know, everyone that is listening to our podcast, they know our overall stance that we think it things will deteriorate, but still we could be in this back and forth slightly up move for the next couple of months.
All right, let's jump to commodities because we had another update in oil markets. There was that recent breakdown attempt, and we haven't fully rejected it. We would still need to get higher still to reject that sell-off. I guess we're back somewhat mid-range here. But you've got a number of thoughts on commodities. But let's start with where we are with oil prices and this crazy idea from the G7 talking about, I don't know, capping Russian energy prices somehow or energy imports.
Yeah, exactly. I'm not going to dwell on that because I just simply can't see how that's going to work. so instead, let's stick with what we know. And we know a market where we've seen a battle between demand destruction, or the worry about demand destruction recently, and the prolonged period of supply constraints and disruptions that I think remain the key focus in the crude oil market. We as John mentioned, we now seen the market bounce 4 days in a row. There is there are some supply worries now coming through once again from Libya. We got Ecuador also mentioned as a possible place where we got political uncertainty that could reduce production. UAE and Saudi Arabia potentially getting close to their ceiling in terms of how much they can increase production with. So generally, really a market that, if anything, remains supported. But the growth numbers and economic indicators will obviously play its part to try to curb the upside. But the underlying strength, I think, most certainly remains. We have, however, seen speculators getting out of the market or reducing exposure in recent weeks so much that the WTI long last week dropped to the lowest levels in 26 months, all the way back to 2020. So that does indicate that some of these speculators who I think that they're responding to the loss of momentum we've seen now in recent weeks, but also the macroeconomic outlook where increasingly they're starting to get somewhat worried, just like we've seen in copper recently where we had that big sell-off.
I just wanted to mention, raise my finger here, the drop in the U.S. strategic reserves has been really remarkable. I think I saw it below 500 million barrels. I mean, at this pace, this thing will be running low within just a few months. Well, running low, of course, there'll be still plenty of reserves, but the pace of the declines has been remarkable there. We just have to consider that this is a temporary source of supply.
Exactly.
That is not going to be there next year, for example.
Exactly, John. And they've basically been releasing oil at the pace that exceeds many major producers, almost a million barrels on a daily basis. That will cease within the next few months. And the big question is, what happens then? Because that million barrel a day almost has obviously helped keep this market range bound. So that's another worry that we have to consider as we move into the autumn months and when that SPR sale starts to dry out. Because at the same time, a lot of this sale is just leasing or just swapping. So basically, the expectations are that they would be bought back and brought back into the reserves eventually. which means that oil has to be bought or taken out of the market in order to refill these storages. And when is that going to happen? And what kind of impact will that have on prices?
That's when we're all running on EVs, I guess. Then we don't have the oil demand, supposedly. But yeah, some key points there. Also, that whole sending checks to everybody in California to make sure that they're compensated for the high gasoline prices there. You've got the Brazilian election situation where Bolsonaro has fired the Petrobras CEO and is trying to get the Petrobras to reset domestic pricing below international pricing to sort of offer inflation offsets for the local population. There are just so many efforts that just end up meaning that demand has a harder time adjusting to what to those higher prices.
Absolutely. Just another one, which is, you can think of it what you like, but I like the components. It's the copper gold ratio. We haven't talked about that one for a while. Last time we talked about it, there was quite a clear signal that something had to give. The ratio was either too high or yields were too low. And now, a few months later, we obviously know what happened. We saw a massive rally in U.S. bond yields, basically reflecting the high copper price we had at the time and relatively low gold prices. Now, within the last couple of months, as you can see on slide 9 here, we've had a very sharp reversal. Most recently with the sell-off in copper. So the copper-gold ratio is now pointing lower again, which basically indicate that, U.S. yields are too high. So is the copper-gold ratio starting to signal some kind of a slowdown? They are. If that's the case, then the yields potentially are close to peaking out if this is what we should go by. But as you can see, we can have long periods where they dislocate. But generally, looking back the last 10 years, you can see there's quite a decent correlation between the two.
Yeah, I'm going to take over a little bit because that segues well into one of the things I wanted to bring up, which is the talk about maybe yields are too high. And if that's the case, it'd be interesting to see what happens with these long yields if we head lower, but also the yield curve itself and that as it relates to consumer confidence, which is key for today's economic calendar. We have the U.S. Consumer Confidence Survey. I've talked endlessly about the disparate, divergence in this survey relative to the Michigan survey. But if you wind back to slide 7, first of all, you can see the overall confidence level is sort of mid-range of the last few years. Pandemic lows were not that remarkable. And then the reason, as we've talked about, inflation is pressuring confidence, but the employment market is so strong that the labor market is so strong that it actually keeps it elevated. So those two things are battling it out. There's an expectations for a pretty significant drop to 100 for this survey, but still not that much lower. And we have Michigan, for example, that survey at record lows. So, but look over on the right hand side and you see the correlation of the expectations less the present situation component of that consumer confidence survey versus the U.S. yield curve, which is shown in blue. And the point being that we're about as low as it gets. We get an inverted yield curve and we have expectations deteriorating rapidly relative to the present situation. But look at prior troughs in this. This happens well ahead of the actual damage to markets, and it happens well ahead of when equity markets, for example, traditionally, at least for the last few cycles, have started to really unwind. So there's this odd idea that we're supposed to be celebrating that the fact the Fed may be easing off and could be heading towards easing, but history shows that it's when Fed is at its maximum easing, in maximum easing mode, and yields are tumbling, that equity markets are tumbling even worse because they're trying to catch up with where economic realities lie. So be careful what you wish for is all I would say in terms of Fed easing, because that's likely simply to be a reflection of a rapidly deteriorating outlook at some point. And one of those other commodities, the commodity that Peter flagged at the top of the program that has suffered a very remarkable move is cotton. And some of this apparently is also economic cycle related.
Exactly, because I think cotton and the copper quite often are used as two indicators of the outlook for growth. And we've seen copper come down quite a bit recently, and cotton especially down 20%, 25% since early June. And the main risk is the prolonged lockdowns in China and growth concerns in China, a major cotton hop or cotton consumer, but generally it's sending a signal of distress and worries about the economic outlook. We did see, however, a bounce yesterday, and I just put in the crop conditions in the U.S. From your part of the world, John, where you come from, weather rose recently has had quite a negative impact on the crop in the ground. So the top right corner there, that this is basically a weekly survey just indicating how big a percentage of the current crop is rated good to excellent. And as you can see, last week it dropped to 37%. It was 70% a year ago, and it's the lowest in at least 10 years. So that will obviously raise some concerns about supply and thereby help alleviate some of this recent demand worry pressures. And also just mentioning that the cotton market has become extremely one-sided from a speculative perspective. I've just put in the bottom right-hand side. You can see the red part of the, which is the number of short positions versus the blue, the number of longs. There's hardly been any short positions for quite a while. That basically means when you do have a correction, you don't have a short position that needs to be covered. That basically means moves can be quite extreme. And I think that's most certainly what we've seen recently.
Interesting setup in that market. All right, let's look forward to earnings today and the rest of the week. Peter, your focus here on slide 11 is on General Mills.
Yeah, there are no interesting earnings today to talk about. So it's we're looking forward to tomorrow, which is all about General Mills. It's a big consumer foods company in the US, and they have naturally been under pressure from rising input costs. You can see that in the little insert on slide 11 from Bloomberg's quarterly figures. You can see how their margins have been squeezed since a year ago. And there is a little bit of expectations for margins to stabilize now at the current level and revenue to pick up. But it's in general, I would say General Mills sits just in the middle of the cost of living crisis that we are seeing in many parts of the world, including in the US, at least in the lower bottom of the income distribution. And the general thing is, the question is, to what extent is General Mills able to keep raising the prices on different things to offset the inflation before it really hurts demand, and then you have a bigger response on the queue. So you're actually not raising revenue because you're actually destroying your own demand. That's the fine balance we'll have to see. And I'm just curious to read into their earnings call, but also the press release, what they are actually seeing on the ground, because they sit. In a different part of the value chain than the retailers. We know already the supermarkets and the retailers have been under enormous pressure. General Mills sits further down the value chain.
Yeah, and then somewhere like General Mills as well. Likely, you mentioned the margin pressures there, but as well, selling obviously a lot of brand name consumer goods, and then that substitution effect if they want to go with store brands or generic brands to go down the inflation ladder. Avoid paying up. So interesting, interesting test for that company. All right, let's look at the macro calendar. Not a whole lot to talk about here. And in general, I'm really curious about this roll into quarter end, as mentioned before, and whether volatility levels pick up generally across the board. On the back of that, we have the confidence number today, as mentioned. Lagarde with the press conference, always painful listening there. But it's a lot of focus here on the ECB's attempt to send out a credible message on tightening policy while preventing spreads from widening at the periphery, all while trying to avoid basically constitutional implications from Germany, for example, on that very effort. So it's just a very big political test for the EU and its whole framework from here, as long as we're in a tightening cycle for sure. Other bits and pieces, home price index out of the US, it's pretty stale data though from April. We have a 7-year treasury auction in the US today, and this was after a bit of an interesting auction yesterday. It's tough to interpret though. So we had both a 2-year and a 5-year auction yesterday. The 2-year was earlier in the day. I didn't see any notable headlines from that one, but the 5-year was noted for being extremely weak. It was the weakest bid to cover since early 21, and there was some other metric on its strength that was the worst since 2010. But again, this did come on the same day as that prior 2-year, the same day. So it was an awful lot of treasuries, in other words, being auctioned off. So maybe a bit of a reassessment here after today's 7-year. Yields did rise in the US, but we're still quite far below, if you look at something like the 10-year benchmark, that 3.5% cycle high, really in limbo here. 3.5 to the upside, 3% even on the downside for that 10-year. Those are two big catalyst levels. If we're below 3%, it's saying a heck of a lot about the forward outlook. It's saying a heck of a lot about, it's sending quite a test through the market from that direction. Through 3.5%, really the pressure's on from a valuation perspective on equities, et cetera. So keep those U.S. Treasury yields on your radar. Then we have the API weekly inventory report out of the U.S. today. Australian retail sales overnight. And we finish up this big ECB conference tomorrow with a number of central bank speakers from around the world, including Fed Chair Powell, Bank of England's Bailey, et cetera. And we'll talk about the other bits and pieces on the macro calendar as the week unfolds here. For now, things look low energy, but I'm not so sure they're going to stay that way. They could, but let's see. I think this quarter end is the big test on whether volatility remains low or picks up again for the summer. For now, that's it. And we'll be back tomorrow with the Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.